Hi, folks, and welcome to First Bite, Fed, Fun, and Functional, a speech therapy podcast sponsored by SpeechTherapyPD.com. I am your host on this nerd venture, Michelle Dawson, MSCCCSLP-CLC, the All Things Peds SLP. I am a colleague in the trenches of home health early intervention right there with you. I run my own private practice, Heartwood Speech Therapy, here in Culletown, South Carolina, and I guest lecture nationwide on best practices for early intervention for the medically complex and fragile child. First Bite's mission is short and sweet, to bring light, hope, knowledge, and joy to the pediatric clinician, parent, or advocate.
By way of a nerdy conversation, so there's plenty of laughter too.
In this podcast, we cover everything from AAC to breastfeeding,
ethics on how to run a private practice,
pediatric dysphagia to clinical supervision,
and all other topics in the world of pediatric speech pathology. Our goal is to bring evidence-based practice straight to you by interviewing subject matter experts
to break down the communication barriers so that we can access the knowledge of their fields.
Or, as a close friend says, to build the bridge.
By bringing other professionals and experts in our field together, we hope to spark advocacy, joy, and passion for continuing to grow and advance care for our little ones.
Every fourth episode, I join you. I'm Erin Forward, MSP, CCC, SLP, the Yankee by way of Rochester, New York transplant who actually inspired this journey. I bring a different perspective, that of a newish clinician with experience in early intervention, pediatric acute care, and nonprofit pediatric outpatient settings.
So sit back, relax, and watch out for all our squirrels, and enjoy this geeky gig brought to you by SpeechTherapyPD.com. Hey, this is Michelle Dawson, and I need to update my disclosure statements. So my non-financial disclosures. I actively volunteer with Feeding Matters, National Foundation of Swallowing Disorders, NFOSD, Dysphagia Outreach Project, DOP. I am a former treasurer with the Council of State Association Presidents, CSAP, a past president of the South Carolina Speech, Language, and Hearing Association, SCISHA, a current Board of Trustees member with the Communication Disorders Foundation of Virginia, and I am a current member of ASHA, ASHA SIG 13, SCISHA, the Speech Language Hearing Association of Virginia, SHAV, a member of the National Black Speech Language Hearing Association in BOSLA, and Dysphagia Research Society, DRS. My financial disclosures include receiving compensation for First Bite podcast from SpeechTherapyPD.com, as well as from additional webinars and for webinars associated with Understanding Dysphagia, which is also a podcast with SpeechTherapyPD.com. And I currently receive a salary from the University of South Carolina in my work as adjunct professor and student services coordinator, and I receive royalties from the sale of my book, Chasing the Swallow: Truth, Science, and Hope for Pediatric Feeding and Swallowing Disorders, as well as compensation for the CEUs associated with it from SpeechTherapyPD.com. So those are my current disclosure statements. Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Erin Forward, and these are my disclosure statements. I receive a salary from Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. I receive royalties from Speech Therapy PD for my work with First Bite podcast and other presentations. I also receive payment for sales from the First Bite boutique, which I have with Michelle Dawson. For non-financial disclosures, I am a member of ASHA and a member of Special Interest Group 13. I also am a volunteer for Feeding Matters. I am a contributor for the book Chasing the Swallow with Michelle Dawson, which I receive no financial gain. I also am a member of the South Carolina Coalition Committee with ICDL-DIF full-time.
The views and opinions expressed in today's podcast do not reflect the organizations associated with the speakers and are their views and opinions solely.
All right, everybody, we have a treat today. Also, we have the cutest little wingman in existence ever assisting with today's episode. And like, I'm kind of wishing I had a uterus back because he's really cute. But like, oh, that's in a medical waste up somewhere, probably getting analyzed. But anywho, today's guest is none other than a very dear friend who means more to me than I think that she knows. We have Sarah Brashears, who has mentored the daylights out of me, both as an SLP and allowing me to embrace my muchness and other facets of my life. We'll do tarot card readings later. Ha ha ha, just kidding, but not really. anywho, and her sweet cousin, well, technically niece, and then he's technically your nephew. Well, great nephew? Yes.
My great nephew.
Yeah. I have a great niece and she's 6 months old and she's got these cheeks that just go for days and you just kind of want to like bite them. But yep. Anyway,
yep. Nibble.
But y'all, we're talking about something that most of us just entertain the notion on, but fear and anxiety hold us back. We're talking about wanting to be an entrepreneur. And that word, one, is bloody freaking difficult to say. I can't tell you how many times I had to practice saying it before we started recording. But two, it's that you have a need, you identify it, and you want to work to fill it. But can you? How do you? It's so overwhelming. And yet, Sarah has done this so many different times in so many different capacities that it truly is awe-inspiring. So, with all the guests, you know, we love a good backstory. And I know Sarah's been on here on the past, but her backstory is incredibly powerful. So I will pass the proverbial mic over to Sarah and then Savannah. We will grow together. So hi, lady.
Hi. Thank you for having all three of us.
take me from the top. How in the world did your newest creation, it is Short and Sweet Stories, an interactive book for speech and language written by Sarah Brashears, MA, CCC, SLP, and illustrated by Savannah Reeser. How did this happen?
So this is the book that I accidentally wrote about a decade ago and was released a little less than a month ago. Yeah. Whenever I wrote these stories, they were never supposed to be a book. These were stories that I wrote as a tool for therapy for me to use with my clients. I was a brand new, like, infant SLP in my CF, and I was working for the public schools in Nashville, and they gave us $100 for therapy materials for the entire year. And I know, like, SLPs throughout our career, we just accumulate like this massive pile of materials and resources to snatch whenever we need something for therapy. And as a brand new CF, you don't have that. You're literally starting from ground zero. And so I started looking on Pinterest for free, I literally searched free speech therapy materials. And I found my way over to Teachers Pay Teachers. And that just opened my eyes to all of the things that you can create and share and all of the things that were available. And talking about being an entrepreneur, I think the thing that has made me even think that I could do it, made me even like take the chance on any of my entrepreneurial adventures, is just my mom instilled in me that, like, you just figure it out. Nobody got a special handbook or playbook on life. You figure it out. And she didn't believe in the word no. And so if somebody told her no, she was like, okay, bet. And would just find a way. And so I decided that I was going to start a Teachers Pay Teacher store, which then led to, you know, you have to have a blog and you have to have an Instagram and you have to have a Pinterest and all of this stuff to promote it, which then led to my business now and me knowing you, me even being here today because I know you. And so through social moguls and doing social media for SLP brands, I met the wonderful Jenna Castro Casbon, the independent clinician, and I was helping her prep her book launch last March. And I was thinking, you know, that is something that I need to do. And I've always thought that I wanted to write a book, but I didn't know what it would be. And I was like, I want a book because I want passive income, which joke was on me. Books are not where you get rich, people.
No, they're not. Done that.
But it just dawned on me, like, you have these stories that you wrote that you never did anything with other than, you know, using them in therapy. Yeah. And they were such a great tool as, you know, an SLP that has a caseload of like 90 kids and has to see 5 at a time. And you have all of these diverse goals and, you know, maybe someone's working on past tense and someone's working on R and someone's working on ING and all of these different goals that you have truly about 20 minutes to work on with 5 kids. And yeah. So that's where these stories came from. And through the process of helping Jenna launch, I realized these need to be out into the world. These need to be a book. There's so many other SLPs and parents that could benefit from having these. So let's do it. And knew nothing about doing a book, literally nothing. But I knew that I have a wonderful, talented, genius niece who I just texted her and I said, hey, do you want to do a book together? Do you want to illustrate it? And so she was like, okay. So yeah, here we are. I will let her tell you kind of her experience with it. Because truly, without her and without her talent and her major dedication to this, it wouldn't have ever happened. She genuinely brought the book to life and gave all of the characters that I had written about a decade ago, she gave them life. So, Nana, I'll let you tell the story.
Can I just interject that my favorite is the cow with the bow? And I love that it's got your dolphins in the background. I know, but she's adorable. But like, I feel like that should be a Pixar movie about her. But sorry, Savannah, I was so excited about the cow with the bow. I grew up with cows. We had a pet cow. Her name was Miss Linda. So weird story, but that made me. Of course, we had a pet cow named Miss Linda. She's lovely. Hi, Savannah.
Hi. So I am Savannah. Sarah is my aunt. And I don't, was it a text or was it a FaceTime call? Because I was kind of thinking it was a FaceTime. It might have been a text.
It was FaceTime. We FaceTime almost every day.
Yeah. But yeah, it was kind of like a, oh, that sounds fun, but is it ever really going to happen? Like, am I just kind of like having fun drawing? I think I was probably halfway through the book before it became like real. And it was like, oh, this is going to be a real book. This isn't just fun drawings. But I started drawing. I think I was in college doing my interpreting classes, and it just was kind of a way to pass the time, a study break, and I kind of just picked up a lot of tips and tricks on the way, learned as I went, and yeah, so when Sarah sent me the stories, I took it like sentence by sentence and just started drawing and had fun with it, and then, like I said, about halfway through, I was like, oh, this is real. Like, this is an actual book coming alive.
Wait, most folks don't know, but you are an ASL interpreter, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What all is involved in that training?
So I went to my local community college. Well, I actually, at first, I was kind of didn't know what I wanted to do, like everybody. And I just randomly picked, what was it? I think it was physical therapy assisting. I was like, you know what? I'll do that. Why not? Mm-hmm. And I actually missed the deadline to apply for the program. So my academic advisor was like, you know, do you want to just take some classes in the meantime and just till the deadline rolls back around? And so I took ASL1 and I absolutely fell in love with it. I knew it was kind of just this like pull that I knew that's what I was supposed to be doing. So I obviously immediately ditched physical therapy assisting or whatever it was. And yeah, switched right over to ASL. So I did all of my ASL classes. I think whenever I was in ASL 2 or 3 is when I took the first interpreting class. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of just went from there. My internship is where I learned the absolute most. Just getting out there and doing it is where you learn. So,
my sons go to a private school, but it's on the Virginia School for the Deaf and the Blind campus. So one recess each week is with their deaf peers, and then they attend the choir performances for the students that are visually impaired. And it's really cool. So we've been practicing. So like Bear, my name is Bear. Y'all can't see it. I'm signing. And like Bear has social anxiety, like his mom. And he's like, well, I got out there and then I just kind of growled. And I was like, okay, buddy. So like, let's regroup and try that again. Because We don't want to growl at humans, especially the humans that are your age and can't hear you. So like, let's try, let's practice, but like, he's working on it. But like, when I was reading your bios in the book, I was just like, of course, the need to help communicate runs in your family. I mean, it permeates everything I know about your lovely family and all the times I have met y'all vicariously through like FaceTimes or like all the things. It just, there is so much joy and passion and love there. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we want to tell like a little bit about the family dynamic? Because I think whenever people hear niece, they think toddler. And whenever I say that my niece has a toddler, they're very confused. So let me give a little backstory there. So my sister is Savannah's mom, and she is 16 years older than me. I was a big surprise for my parents, but I like to joke that I turn out to be the best one. Yeah. So whenever I was 8, Savannah's older brother was born and I became an aunt. And mm-hmm. So then whenever I was 12, Savannah was born. So she and I are closer in age than me and my sister, her mom. And I feel like God really did me a solid by setting our family up this way, especially knowing that I would lose both of my parents so young, because her parents are now the matriarch and patriarch of our family. And her sister has always, or her mom, my sister has always felt kind of like a motherly figure to me. And Savannah has always felt really more like a little sister than my niece, hands down, my very best friend. And so, yeah, our family dynamic is just different, but I think that I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And it now, knowing like the way that life has played out, I'm like, okay, God, I see you. I see what you did there. So yeah, that's how I have a niece that's old enough to illustrate a book with me.
I mean, I was just thinking, Bear has been writing a book called Sir Dr. Bubble Butt versus the World. Sorry, Sir Dr. Bubble Butt is his hamster. Out of context, that doesn't really make sense. But like, phrasing, Michelle. But he draws little pictures in his iPad in the pages, and he's figured out how to do this. And I didn't know you could draw in an iPad in Microsoft Word. So that was very exciting. So he got y'all's book in the mail, and he's like, I can publish my book now. And I'm like, okay, buddy, we'll work on that. So he now wants to publish Sir Dr. Bubble Butt versus the World. Also a really creepy story he wrote about a vampire. And I'm like, the world's not ready for vampire murder mysteries just yet from a tiny human. So we need a little longer on that one. But okay, this is amazing. So you created this because you had a need. But can you talk about some of the therapeutic approaches or like the science behind it, or like why literacy is important embedding in our sessions, or where do you want to go here? There's like 400 different ways.
Yeah. So like I was saying, whenever I decided to write these stories, it was because I had a massive caseload. I don't remember the exact number, but it hovered around 80. And as a CF, like that is just absurd. I know that it's all too common, but whenever you have such a small window of time to see these kids, and you know, you can only see them during certain time periods during the day and only certain days of the week because they can't miss certain activities and they need to be in class for that. And you know, our time with them is so limited. And so I ended up having groups of 4 and 5 and just having these massively diverse goals for all of them. I found that stories were kind of like the common tool that I could use with everyone. Pretty much any goal that you want to work on, I could do that with a story. But for my Artic kiddos, I needed stories that were really phoneme rich with whatever their goal sounds were. And so that's why each story is written and like heavy on a specific phoneme. So there's 22 stories, and each story is a different phoneme that it targets.
Well, Savannah, when you were illustrating it, was there any that you were like, I really like, because it's almost like alliteration. I love alliteration. I think it's fantastic. But was there any that you were like, this one is meaningful as an interpreter, as well as a mom?
Let me think about that.
Does Miller have any favorites?
Miller has all the favorites. We have read it through probably 7-8 times by now, like completely cover to cover have read it through. And I'll try to turn the page and like read the next page. He'll flip it back and point. He likes to point out the characters and look at the pictures. He loves it. We have read it so many times. It's become a favorite for sure.
I love that. And I think that was when deciding to make it a book, that was the exact scenario that I was thinking of. Outside of, you know, not only SLPs can use this, like reading is such a bonding experience for parents and their children. And that was one thing, like growing up, mom read to all of us. And I feel like all the time, like we were constantly reading, and her doing that, always having a book in our hands, made us all love reading. And that love of reading has taught me more than my master's program, than all 7 years I spent in college, than anything else that I've ever done. Having a love for reading has given me so much more knowledge. And I feel like it's like the ultimate like life hack. Anything that you want to learn, it's out there. Just go find a book and start reading and then put it into play and learn from the experience. But those books give you that foundational knowledge. And I think like that bonding experience of reading with your mom instills, and Michelle, I know you do this with the boys too, and your boys love to read. That will take you so much further than a lot of things that, you know, we do in childhood. And I love that Miller loves it, especially just knowing that like you guys get to share that, and that that's something that he'll grow up with and know that like that's part of your legacy now.
Keeping up with you on Goodreads is impossible. You have so many books that you accomplish each year. And I really like graphic novels because they're just, it's light and it's fun and it breaks up the monotony of like the technical one reads that I have. But folks, if you're listening, I highly recommend that you check out the book Tales from the Kitty Litter. It's a parenting graphic novel and it's freaking hysterical. Also, if you catch your 9-year-old and 11-year-old reading it, you've been warned. It's not always child appropriate, but they read it and they're like, "Mom, is this what it's really like?" And I'm like, "Yep, that's what it's like." I mean, cartoon cat form, but like, that's what it's like. So you're right. And I think back about some of the research with embedding speech therapy strategies, especially phonological impairments, in the literacy format and doing it outside of just therapy. And there's a ton to support. Dr. Kelly Farquharson, she was the ASHA Convention SLP chair this past November, and she just got her ASHA fellow. One of her recent publications, the tail end of last year, was on the value of training parapros in joint reading tasks and how if we teach not just the teacher and not just as a therapist use it, but even if we teach and train the parapros that spend the most time with some of our more medically complex patients, the children acquire the strategies, whether it be literacy acquisition, speech sound, just like they're acquiring it in a faster rate because it's another person that's buying into the value of those shared moments, like what you talk about. Mm-hmm. We didn't cover that. We're trying to figure out schedules to do an episode just on that research, but it's profound. Also, I found out she's the editor for the Language, Speech, and Hearing Science in the Schools, which is like a big to-do. But I mean, y'all, the resources on this. So get a book, read it. I also love No David. This made me think of No David because some of the naughty kids, y'all read No David's? Savannah's like, yes. No, the No David Christmas one.
I don't think I have.
If you saw the cover, you would at least like recognize the book for sure.
Yeah. Maybe Schitt's Creek is just like infiltrating my thoughts whenever I think of David, because you said No David and I heard Ooh David.
Okay, I haven't watched Schitt's Creek yet. Is it really that good?
Oh, it's so good. Oh. It's a like if you need just like a feel good, funny, kind of lighthearted show, it's so good.
That's the show. Whenever I worked, went into labor, I was like, turn that show on because it's just happy, lighthearted. gets the oxytocin running, that is the show.
You say oxytocin running, and then my CLC brain goes, oh, that's where we latch. And that does that. Okay, also, can I just say, and I don't know why this has been on my heart lately, but I had a different person reach out and they were asking breastfeeding questions. And I gave the advice that I wish had been given to me. If a caregiver is breastfeeding or chest feeding, and they enjoyed their areolas being addressed in a certain situation, and then you go to breastfeed, it makes your brain switch because the oxytocin doesn't, I mean, it comes, but it's like a different method. And nobody talks about that. Nobody gives new lactating mothers that it's okay to be like, hey, yesterday it was nipple foreplay and today it's breastfeeding. And that's okay to give your mind time to reset about that. But I asked, like, when I was, you know, I'm a CLC, but at the time I was not. And my CLC came in when I had Bear and Goose, and it was Goose and he was the first. And I was trying to explain it. She was like, that's inappropriate. And she like shamed me on it. And I was just,
no.
Yes. And that moment of shame is what made me then seek out how do I set another caregiver up for success and not do this. And that was one of the factors into me getting a CLC, which is connected because of, like, to me, that's growing my skill set. That's being an entrepreneur. I'm growing what I can offer. But your book came from a moment of need, and my CLC came from a moment of shame, and nobody should feel shame about how their body feels. So who knew we would talk about nipple foreplay and a book today? That's great. I'm not quite sure how.
You know, not surprised though, Michelle. Not surprised.
Christian's gonna die when he hears this. Okay, back to the topic at hand. Okay, so talk to me more about, did you have an aha moment when you were doing this with your patients or your clients in the schools where you're like, this is really beneficial? This is where it's at for this child.
I feel like with groups, well, I feel like with students in general, there's always the like, are we going to play a game? Can we play Candyland? Can we do this? Can we do Papa Pirate? Like,
I love
but
Papa
whenever
Pirate.
They would get, well, Candyland is my jam. Like, I still love Candyland. And I feel like I just aged myself by saying Candyland is my jam, but I don't care. I still love it. But it was whenever they would get, maybe not quite as excited, but they would get excited for our stories. And then whenever I would send these stories home, whenever I was in private practice and I was seeing peds, and I would send these stories home, and then moms or dads would tell me, yeah, like we read this together every night, or we read this together four times on Sunday. And like, I think obviously this started as a speech therapy tool, but I think like the coolest part of it for me is seeing those like bonding experiences that it creates. And when we're learning in that environment, like we feel safe, we feel secure. You don't have a better learning environment than that. And I was reading some research preparing for this talk. And one of the things that they have seen through functional MRI is that during maternal shared reading time, it's positively correlated with brain activation in areas of language, executive function, and social emotional processing in like preschool, early elementary children. And so it's not just like the words on the pages. It's the experience of reading them and having, you know, the talk that like surrounds reading, like the discussion and expansion that parents and speech therapists give. Like that is where the real growth happens. And so like these stories were written as a therapy tool, but I think that they are truly like so much more than that because of the experiences that they create, which then leads to greater gains in language and speech, which is, you know, why we started. But it just has like grown into something that I never anticipated.
Erin always quotes the number. If she was here, she could do it off the top of her head. But if you learn something through a context of play during child-led, I think it's like so many iterations. But if you have to learn it through like structured, formal, unpleasant repetition, it's like several hundred more.
Yeah.
And that to me, you hit at the heart of it. Like that MRI is showing the why, because we're in a safe space, but we can also fall back on, and I know I talk about it all the time, but the Maslow scale of hierarchical need. If our foundation isn't set, if we don't feel secure, then we ourselves are not ready to grow and learn. Honestly, I take my DIR course tomorrow night. I finally signed up for the DIR course, and I have wanted to take this course for so many years, but I wasn't in a place because we had the move, we had this, I had so many other projects going on. I wasn't in a place to have that part of my brain and cup filled. I had to get to my safe space for learning. I should read the book. But I mean, we're proof of that. Like when you have the course that you want to take, when you have the task that you want to do, but you have to be there. Yeah. This is profound and this is lovely. And I'm holding it up. Nobody can see it, but I know that this is a video call. So she's going to save that call for later, but it truly is wonderful. And folks can find this because I want to ask all the other entrepreneurial questions, but I want to be respectful of our times. So if folks are interested in checking out Short and Sweet Stories, where do they find it?
So you can go to shortandsweetstories.com and find all the info about the book as well as the link to buy it. And then there's also going to be, hopefully in the next month, these will be done, some free downloads, both for parents and for SLPs, just about like the best ways to use these stories as a tool for your children, as well as like some milestone information for parents too. And if you want to skip all of that and go straight to add to cart, you can find us on Amazon. It's also on barnesandnoble.com. On Amazon, you can get the paperback, Kindle, or hardback. And the paperback, like they all have the same content, but the paperback will save you a little money, just FYI.
I bought the hardback. I love the hardback. And then next time I hug you, you have to sign it for me because this is like, yes, but it's going on my bookcase. I'll let the students loan it out, but they have to bring it right back. See, okay, can I request the next round of entrepreneurial being flashcards based off of your characters?
Ooh. Off of the stories. So we've actually talked about getting like, and if anyone listening has like the hookup or knows how to do this, please DM me. We want to make stuffed animals out of the characters. So like Miss Molly Moo, your cow with the bow, like she would be like, so then you can like use those as you're reading the story. But I hadn't thought about flashcards.
I'm just saying you could do both, but I really love the idea of like, or like little felt puppets. Mm. You guys, this is how you're an entrepreneurial SLP. You're like, oh, I like this. We could do this. And then 14 rabbit holes later, Alice, we have.
No, truly, that is how it happens. That is how I feel like anytime you and I get together, it's like all the rabbit holes, but there's so many ideas that come out of it. And that's literally where it starts, is somebody says, oh, this would be cool. And then you decide, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to find a way. I have said for a long time that like my social media business was built on audacity. I had the audacity to believe that I could. I had the audacity to believe that I could create something out of thin air. And I said, yes, let's do it. And then I figured it out. Like it's jumping and weaving your parachute on the way down. I feel like that is like the heart of being an entrepreneur. But it all starts with conversations like this one.
Mm-hmm. So it is very overwhelming if you sit back on the other side of having worn so many hats and look at it in retrospect, right? Because you're like, but how did that happen? And you're like, well, one thing led to this, and it led to this, and it led to this. But if you are in graduate school right now, and you're like, I have this idea, or I'm frustrated, or I paid all this money, I don't want to be a clinician every day for the rest of my life. There are so many different ways to broaden your horizons and not feel that your only career option is just to be an SLP. I have a friend who does fashion influencing on the side. And I'm like, how is that a thing as an SLP? And she's loving it and thriving. And because of her, I've bought a lot of face products, which I didn't ever anticipate that I would, because apparently fashion and face go together. So I now own the rolly thing that you, the pink marbly, I don't know what it does, but it feels really good on my face in the morning. So I'm going to roll it. I don't know if it's actually making a difference, but that's because Sarah Greer, you're a delightful influence. Yes, it's an influence. But I think it's making my cheeks pop.
You were influenced.
I was influenced. But can you take us through your journey as an entrepreneur? Like, where did it begin? And then what relatable, actionable steps along the way could somebody tune in and say, okay, I need to consider doing that?
So I feel like, and Savannah, I feel like you have kind of experienced this too. Like, whenever you grow up with parents who are self-employed, who have built their own business, even if it's like a party of one, a business of one. I saw the flexibility that my parents had because they were, my dad was a carpenter and my mom cleaned houses. And then she owned a daycare actually with Savannah's mom, my sister, for a while, but they always worked for themselves. And I saw the autonomy and the flexibility that they had. And I mean, this was never, ever what I thought I was going to do. Like, I was going to be an acute SLP. Forever. That was my plan. But life happened. And I think that I was craving that flexibility. Whenever I decided to start Social Moguls, it was during Christmas break of 2020. And I had gone home for Christmas and Savannah and I were talking about it. And I was just like, to the point that I felt like I'm never going to be able to pay off my student loans working in a clinical role. I don't want someone else to tell me when I can come home and see my family and when I have to be in a building doing XYZ. And I don't want someone dictating how I see my kids, like telling me what I can and can't do in therapy and who can and can't qualify for therapy. Like, absolutely not. I've always been way too, my mom called me bossy, but maybe it's bossy, maybe it's independent. I don't know. I just
demonstrating leadership skills. That's yes. What that is.
Yes. I have always had great leadership skills. But I feel like, Savannah, you have that flexibility in your job now. And I feel like we just were raised that like we wanted more freedom and more control over our lives. Yes, and so yeah.
That's what I was thinking, all the memories while you're saying all of this. But I remember being in elementary school and the like smallest little, not truly important little award ceremonies or you get a certificate for A's and B's or whatever. My mother and my granny were there. Sarah's mom and Sarah's sister, my mom, my grandmother, were there every single one because they had the flexibility because they were self-employed. So that was always important to me growing up. It was amazing always having somebody there. And so I knew I wanted that as well. I'm the kind of woman I've always known I wanted to be a mom. So I knew when the day comes when I have kids, I want to be there. I want to do something where I can not go to work and go and do for my son if I need to. And being an interpreter, right now I'm working mostly in college classes interpreting, but when you do freelance interpreting, you can kind of pick and choose. Like, no, that time doesn't work for me, so I won't pick up that job. I'll pick up a different job. And my work really affords me that. So,
yeah, I think we just had that example set, and that's kind of the precedent. Mm-hmm. But as far as actionable things.
Wait, can you explain what Social Mogul is for those that don't know about it?
Yeah. So through my experience with promoting Short and Sweet Speech, my Teachers Pay Teachers store, the blog, all of that that goes with that brand, I learned social media and I took a really big interest in it. And I think truly just because it was fun. It was fun to me to like experiment and see like, okay, well, let's create this kind of content and see what happens. And you could see it really resonate with people. And you get people in the comments saying, thank you for saying this. I have felt like this forever. And reading it on your page makes me feel seen and makes me feel like I'm not alone in this. Mm-hmm. Or making people laugh with a funny meme and then being like, oh my God, I needed this today. Thank you for sharing this. Like, that connection is so cool. But experimenting with content and seeing what works and what doesn't, and what that return engagement looks like whenever you create different types, it was a lot of trial and error, and I found it really interesting. And so, like the little nerd that I am, I started researching it and reading up on it and taking courses on it. And so I just really learned how social media works and like how you build community and not just followers. And so other people started noticing. And so I was asked to help with social media for other people. And I actually got to run the social media part of a Senate campaign for the SLP that was my big in grad school.
Nice.
It was so cool. I like flew home because she was running for Senate in Oklahoma. I flew home and I like ran to the polls to get the results as soon as they closed. And I kind of felt like I was a little like Olivia in Scandal. Like, I felt very like, I don't know, how cool that I got to be part of the political world for a minute. Totally not my world. But anyways, all of that to say that all of that experience led to me starting a social media marketing agency for healthcare brands. So we primarily work with SLPs, so private practices that are SLP owned, or brands that market to SLPs. That also was not my intention. Whenever I very first started, I was like, I want to do this for Airbnbs because then I'll get like free stays when I travel. But I found out that it like also is very aligned for me to work with SLPs, because I feel like one of the major things that led to me feeling so burnout and led to me not wanting to work clinically and feeling like I can't do this forever was feeling like no one freaking knows what we do. No one understands the true value of the work that we do. And feeling like yes. Every day in rounds, it was a different doctor who didn't understand why they should be referring to SLPs, who didn't understand that like a nursing bedside screen is not the same thing as an SLP swallow eval, that you can't determine aspiration at bedside. Like, all of these things that we just freaking bang our heads into all the time, those were so frustrating to me. That was part of what led to me not wanting to work clinically. But now, through social moguls, it's like someone gave me the biggest megaphone that they could find, and I get to just shout it from the rooftops how badass the work that we do really is and how much change we really make for patients and the options that are available for SLPs to continue learning so that we can continue improving, so that more people will know about the awesome work that we do, more patients will be reached. And I never expected that, but that is hands down the coolest part of what I get to do through social media, through social moguls. And now we have a team of, I think, 7, and 6 of them are SLPs who work for me. And getting to create these like non-traditional, non-clinical roles for other SLPs has also been really, really freaking cool, and something that I didn't think I would find immense joy in, but I feel extremely honored that I get to do that.
You make it less fearful, which, folks, I can put on a really, really good front, but I am self-deprecating humor at its finest. But like, my social anxiety, my anxiety in general is like a lot at times. And I'll want to do something. And there's that song, Fear is a Liar. It's a Christian song. Oh, I can't remember who sings it. Mm-hmm. But there's the song, Fear is a Liar. And damn it, it holds me back. And it makes me pause. Can I do this? Should we do this? Like, I want to create an SLPs of Faith caucus, because I think if we truly embrace all cultures, then we should honor and accept all the different faiths, because our boys have been very fortunate to go to, I mean, in South Carolina, they went to a Mandarin immersion school. And then here in Virginia, the private school that we go to, we celebrated Kwanzaa. We celebrated Diwali, like the Festival of Lights, because one of the assistant principals is from India. And they have church on Wednesday mornings. We have a Wednesday service at like the little school, but like, and that's Episcopalian. But it's just, I sit back and think about when we go and we're doing therapy and the diversity in the patients that we're seeing, a huge part of their culture, my grandfather clock supports this, is their faith. So like, yes. If I'm going to honor and acknowledge their faith and my faith, I don't have to adhere to it. I can still honor and acknowledge it. And that's something that, I mean, mm-hmm. as many caucuses as we have professionally, I would love to have that embedded within. And it doesn't have to be SLPs of faith because there mm-hmm. are audiologists, but like you make me feel like that dream is possible. Because then I think about utilizing that as a social media platform to talk about this high holiday is coming up. And here's potential mm-hmm. language and words that your patients, your clients may, or customs, or from like a feeding dysphagia perspective, this could be a food that they need to adhere to or abstain from. Because I mean, I have a lot of friends that are Catholic. There's a lot of fish. Ooh, I'm still reading the book on salt because it's just taken a minute to get through. But it's salt, the history of the world told through salt, which makes me intrinsically really hungry reading this because they also give recipes over the ages. Like, did you know ketchup used to be made with sardines and not tomatoes? Everybody's face just cringed. The first ketchup was called catsup, C-A-T-S-U-P, and it was made with squished sardine goo. It was like all the rage in the 1600s. I don't have a nerve, but like, that's fascinating. And then in the early 1800s, somebody in New Jersey put a tomato in it with sardines, and then they phased the sardines out because it turns out tomato-based ketchup sells more than sardine-based. Who knew? But like somehow there was a point. This was a really long tangent and I forgot the original point. But social media for SLPs of faith, but you make that feel possible. I swear somehow that connected, but I mean,
yeah, I'm with you. I'm following the loop back around.
Okay. But like that leap of faith, no pun intended, taking those steps, like what did you do to step out and find your entrepreneurial self? How did you grow yourself and what resources did you like study?
Honestly, like most of it was trial and error. Even this book was very much trial and error. One little tidbit that we learned the freaking hard way is if you're going to write a book, if you're going to draw all of these beautiful illustrations for a book, look at the publisher that you're using, and they have templates for the specific sizes that your pages should be.
Oh, Savannah.
And pay attention to your color profile.
Yeah.
Your what?
Yeah. Yeah, so, right?
What's yeah. a color profile?
I still don't entirely know. That Sarah saved it. I still don't know, but Sarah managed to save it.
So the colors that you see on your computer screen, there's a much wider array of colors that can be displayed digitally than what can be printed on paper or a t-shirt or whatever. So RGB is what you see on your screen. It's like the, I don't know, I guess they call it a color profile, but it's basically like the prism of colors that you have to choose from. But whenever you decide that you want to print something, you have to produce that in CMYK, and it stands, I can't remember what it stands for. RGB is like red, green, blue. Okay. But then CMYK is like, I can't remember the colors, but it's a different color profile. And so like whenever you have something that you have drawn in RGB and you have all of these colors that don't exist when you print them in CMYK, your color looks totally different. So the book actually on screen, like if you have the Kindle version, it's a lot more vibrant. Or actually, I don't know if the Kindle version is CMYK, but the book on Savannah's iPad where she drew it is a lot more vibrant than what it printed. And that was just something that we didn't know until we go to upload it and we're like, oh, so we have to convert 180 pages
Holy crap.
There were tears. There were a few tears. Oh. I'm not going to lie.
There were a couple of times that we were both just like manically laughing because we were like, you've got to be kidding me. Another one, like another total revamp and like the whole resizing it. So we were thinking, okay, we're going to do an 8x8 book. Well, whenever you do an 8x8 book, you actually have to create like an 8.25 by 8.1 to, I don't know, it's like different dimensions. So you're not actually drawing square pages, but that's what we did. And so whenever we go to put all of this together and upload it to the publisher, we were like, oh, yeah, we did this wrong. Then like whenever you go to stretch the images, like the dedication page where we dedicated it to mom, I think Savannah drew that 4 or 5 times.
In one night. In one night. Because it was like, we got to get it done. Like, we've been working on this for so long. We're excited. We're in the home stretch. We got to get it done. It was in one night. I redrew it. I think 4. I think it was 4 times by the end. Yeah.
Because it was like, she would draw it and then I would take it and upload it and it would give us an error message. And I'd be like, nope, we got to change this. But the only way to fix it was by redrawing it. And so it really was like, just going for it and like just trying it. And those are things we maybe could have prevented if we weren't such a quick start and did a little more fact finding before we jumped in. But I mean, I feel like with starting a Teachers Pay Teachers store, I just went for it. I just started. Teresa Richard taught me. She was one of my very first paying clients for social media. And she taught me ABC, action breeds clarity. And if you take nothing else away.
That's big.
Yeah. And that's truly like whenever I talk about having the audacity, I just started. I just said, okay, I'm doing this. And what's the next thing? What's the first thing that I need to do this? And it was like, okay, we have to pick a company name. Okay. What's next? We have to pick brand colors. Okay, we need to set up an Instagram. Okay, we need to start reaching out and telling people. You have to tell people that you're doing it, which is scary as heck. When actually, whenever I messaged Teresa, I sent her a voice message on Instagram, and I think I recorded it like 6 times before I actually sent it because that's scary, like saying I'm doing this and I deserve to have a spot in the arena. I deserve to have a spot at this table. I have what it takes to do this. That's scary. And the only way to do it is to just do it. And if you will take that first step, you will get clarity on the second step, which that second step will give you clarity on what the third step should be. And you just have to move. And sometimes you're going to move in the wrong direction and it's okay. I don't believe in wrong turns. It's just a redirection and it shows you which way you should go. But truly, action breeds clarity. So whatever it is that you have an idea for, and that is one of the cool things that I get to do now too, is I do coaching one-on-one for other entrepreneurs. And I kind of get to see these ideas before they come to fruition. I get to see these courses whenever they're just a thought in someone's mind. And I get to give them a little bit more clarity as they take action. But it's really cool to see there's so much brewing in our field right now. I was talking with Kevin Simmons, the singing SLP. I was talking with him the other day about how our field, in a lot of ways, we are not diverse at all. But I think the businesses that are blooming in our field, there's more variety. There's more people doing more things, just different things than ever before. More people are starting stores of their own. They're creating resources. They're doing coaching. They're doing mentorship. They're offering all of these different things and finding ways to still show up as an SLP, but non-clinically. And all of them, I don't know all of them, but I know that all of them, to do it, you have to take that first step and figure it out as you go. And enlist coaching. If you need help with marketing, I'm your gal. If you need help with other pieces of it, there's someone who can help you with it. Like, you're never going to feel ready, and you can enlist the help of actually am writing a post about this right now. Like, you can come to me for social media. You can go to my friend Bailey for branding. You can go to Lauren for a website. You can go to Jenna for private practice coach. Like, you can find all of these people that can help you, but no one can take that first step for you. And if you wait to feel ready, you're never going to do it. Feeling ready is not a thing.
No, it's not.
BS.
Yes. Okay. So there's a quote by Teddy Roosevelt. It's called The Man in the Arena. Have you heard that?
I feel like I have.
It's at the beginning of my book. It's, I got writer's block and fear and just froze and I wasn't going to do it. And I was done and I'm done. And Christian made me sit down and he made me watch one of Brené Brown's TED Talks where she quotes it. And he goes, oh, I love this man. And so there I am, curled up next to him in bed, sobbing, just ugly crying. There's no way I can finish this. Why did I think that I could? And we watched the video together and I was like, that's it. That's the quote. So y'all, this quote, do you want to read it?
Yeah. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how strong the man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred with dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. That is the most Brené Brown quote, which her TED Talk is amazing. And if you need a pep talk to get you off your butt and in the arena, like, she's the one.
That inspiration to want to do it. You are 100% correct. Also, Erin and I opened a boutique because she said, let's make shirts. And I was like, cool. Did we give any thought into it other than the fact that I could have a colon on a sweatshirt? No, but I have a colon on a sweatshirt. And that makes me really happy. But it turns out after you make a boutique with colons on sweatshirts, you're supposed to advertise it. So like, dun, dun, dun. I was like, well, just, yeah. So folks, when you're being an entrepreneur and you do the first thing, reach out for guidance on the second thing. And on that note, I may or may not have an appointment with Sarah tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. Because you know what? It's okay to need guidance. When you're dancing around that arena, it's okay. Nobody says the man in the arena is a solo. It could be a tag team effort.
The same way that we were talking about books and how you can learn anything that you want to from a book. Books are a way that you can gain knowledge without experience, right? Well, the same can be said for mentorship and coaching. You're leaning on the knowledge and experience of that person that is mentoring you. And I feel like reading and mentorship, they're both two forms of learning. But that is like the ultimate hack. That is the ultimate cheat code, basically, because you're skipping the roadblocks, you're avoiding those wrong turns, you're avoiding the detours because you have someone else's experience that you can draw on and that you can use that to guide you.
Yeah. And I am too old to worry about the quantity. I want the quality, if that makes sense. I would rather save up to buy the fancy salt than get the cheap salt. It makes sense if you read the book Salt. Out of context, again, doesn't really make sense. But it's one of those things. But if you are truly branching out and creating your own as an entrepreneurial, then take the time to grow yourself and seek the counsel of elders. Seek their wisdom. It's okay to admit that you don't know it now, but then go to the one that does.
Yeah.
Ladies, y'all are phenomenal. Is there any closing wisdom that you have or final thoughts?
I don't know. I really, when you were talking earlier about just getting out there and doing it, the memories were flowing, but I was thinking about when we had that first FaceTime call and I'm like, okay, well, what size is it going to be? Where are the words going to go on the page? Because deep down it was like I cannot do this. I'm not an artist. This is not me. I cannot do this. And so I'm like, I don't even know where to start. I don't know what to think. I'm asking 50,000 questions. And every time Sarah would just say, just start drawing. Just read the stories and draw the pictures. Just start drawing. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how to do this. I don't know what I'm doing. Just start drawing. just read the stories and start drawing the pictures and it will be okay. And it was. I am so over the moon with the end product. I could not be happier with it.
Because you did it.
Yes. I don't know how. I really don't. I still couldn't tell you, but we did it.
She spent a lot of all-nighters. And whenever you started drawing, Miller was 6 months old. So having an infant, I truly have to give her all of the credit because this book would have never happened without her. And she spent so much time and energy, even while being a brand new mom and dealing with all that that brings. I think you said it best. You just start drawing.
How old is Miller now?
He is 15 months right now. Mm. We're in the Henri stage today, especially. He is sweet like 95% of the time. He's my little Sour Patch Kid. He really is. He'll give you a whop right on your forehead and then lean in and give you a kiss. Like immediately, just a switch. But he is the sweetest little kid ever. He's the best.
That's also boy mom life. Hold tight, because yes. You're going to have to repaint the trim in the bathroom when you're done potty training. They don't write that in the mom books. I've read the mom books. And on the other side of two boys and two tallywhackers, it's, oh, wait, no. The best was over Christmas break, I was putting my face on. It's what I say when I throw my makeup on. And Goose, my 11-year-old, comes in and he knocks on the door. He goes, Mom, I have a question to ask you. And I'm like, okay, Bubby, what is it? And he goes, what does a tootie tall look like? Does it kind of look like a little butt, but in the front? And I was like, yes, but it's furry. So because I didn't know what to say. I mean, I was throwing my makeup on. I mean, I was like completely dressed. Everything was fine. But I was just like, what do you say when your 11-year-old son asks you what a tootie tall looks like? And so like, these are the things that are not in the mom books. And so like, yes. And folks, we call it a tootie tall and a tallywhacker because that's how I was raised. So mom books, enjoy them, read them with your tiny humans, and buy those.
Oh my God.
And just know there's more to it than that. There's always more than what's in the parenting books.
Yes. Oh, that's what we should do next. Write a real life parenting book because the other ones, they don't meet muster.
I told you, I'm starting a podcast called The Shit No One Tells You. And I feel like this is very much the shit no one tells you about being a boy mom.
You can have Michelle and I on for an episode.
Yeah.
I call dibs on the you know what that no one tells you for breastfeeding and boy raising.
I feel like those are the conversations that need to be had. So that's what we're going to do.
That's brilliant. But see, here you are entrepreneuring again. Is that a word? Entrepreneuring? Well, ladies, thank you so very much. At the end, I always ask if one, folks want to reach you, where can they find you? And two, if somebody listening has a little bit of love money left over at the end of the month, where could they donate it to?
You can find all the book info on shortandsweetstories.com. On Instagram, I am two places. You can find me at Short and Sweet Speech or at social.moguls for all social media things. Savannah, do you want to give your Instagram?
I don't even know my Instagram. Oh my goodness. Let me look. Hold on.
She's at sav, S-A-V-V dot Reese, R-E-A-S.
No, R-E-A-S-E-R. It's my full last name.
Oh, it's Reese.
Sarah got all the social media genes, if that's a thing. I am awful. But.
Okay, wait. Say it one more time. It's at sav.
S-A-V-V dot R-E-A-S-E-R.
And then a place to donate, maybe your local library. I think that that would probably be a good place. Your local library, and maybe while you're there, tell them about the book and that they should get a copy.
I was thinking, I'm just going to go take Stanton Library copy. So folks, if you're in Stanton, Virginia, you go downtown and there's a copy of the book, I donated it.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, thank y'all for coming on. And thank you for sharing your energies and your joys with the world on so many fronts. So yes. Okay, folks. Check us out on First Bite Podcast on the land of Instagram and Facebook. And You can check Erin out at Erin Forward SLP. There might be a dot in her Instagram handle. And mine's Michelle Dawson SLP. To be fair, mine is mostly pictures of food, dog, and mischief adventures with my children. So not the most SLP content heavy, but like things that make me happy. There's a park here. We go see the ducks. There's lots of duck pictures now coming. But, you know, goose, a bear, and some ducks. But everybody, thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for joining us for today's course. To complete the course, you must log into your account and complete the quiz and the survey. If you have indicated that you are part of the ASHA registry and entered both your ASHA number and a complete mailing address in your account profile prior to course completion, we will submit earned CEUs to ASHA. Please allow 1 to 2 months from the completion date for your CEUs to reflect on your ASHA transcript. Please note that if this information is missing, we cannot submit to ASHA on your behalf. Thanks again for joining us. We hope to see you next time.
Feeding Matters guides system-wide changes by uniting caregivers, professionals, and community partners under the Pediatric Feeding Disorder Alliance. So what is this alliance? The Alliance is an open-access collaborative community focused on achieving strategic goals within 3 focus areas: education, advocacy, and research. So who is the Alliance? It's you. The Alliance is open to any person passionate about improving care for children with a pediatric feeding disorder. To date, 187 professionals, caregivers, and partners have joined the Alliance. You can join today by visiting the Feeding Matters website at www.feedingmatters.org. Click on PFD Alliance tab and sign up today. Change is possible when we work together.
That's a wrap, folks. Once again, thank you for listening to First Bite, fed, fun, and functional. I'm your humble but yet sassy host, Michelle Dawson, the All Things Peds SLP. This podcast is part of a course offered for continuing education through SpeechTherapyPD.com. Please check out the website if you'd like to learn more about CEU opportunities for this episode, as well as the ones that are archived. And as always, remember, feed your mind, feed your soul, be kind, and feed those babies. I'm